I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our question this hour is, does a healthy diet have to come at a hefty price? There's a perception that a healthy diet is expensive, and it is, according to our guests, certainly true in some cases. But what's the actual relationship between health and food costs? This hour, we'll have two food marketing experts break down some of the myths behind our fruits and vegetables. Our guests are Kelly Hawes, Associate Professor of Marketing and Chancellor's Faculty Fellow at the Owen Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt University. Her research on consumer behavior with an emphasis on self-control, financial and food decision-making, and health has appeared in numerous publications. Professor Hawes, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Good to have you here.
Doing well, thank you.
Also joining us is Professor Rebecca Walker Resnick, who is an associate professor of marketing at the Fisher College of Business at The Ohio State University, and Dr. Resnick's research focuses on the area of consumer behavior. Dr. Resnick, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. So let me get just an answer before we get into the specifics. Does a healthy diet have to come at a hefty price? Kelly?
Well, it doesn't have to. That's what we're trying to let people know. It often can, but that need not be the case. And we're hoping that our message will get out there that consumers can be healthy and have a healthier diet without necessarily breaking the bank.
Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, how do you measure the relationship between health and the price of food? It's a difficult thing to do, I would imagine.
It is. And actually, I will say that we are consumer psychologists and not necessarily dietitians. So we relied on some work that the USDA had done looking at, is it true that healthy foods actually are more expensive? And the answer to that question, is it objectively true, is a complicated one. Because you can measure food health in a lot of different ways. You can measure price per calorie, price per edible weight, price to eat the recommended daily allowance. And the USDA has some data out there that suggests that actually in most ways you can measure healthiness of food, it's not necessarily more expensive to eat a healthy diet. But as consumer psychologists, what we were more interested in was not necessarily the objective truth of are all healthy foods more expensive, but what do consumers think? What are their lay theories or their understanding of how this works, whether it's true or not, and how does that affect the decisions that they make in the grocery store?
Mm-hmm. And our lay theories are, and tell me where we get these, that healthy foods are more expensive.
That's right. And a lay theory is it's basically our intuitive understanding of how the world works and where these come from are basically the media is a good source of it. And if you think about the types of coverage we often hear in the media about healthy foods, we hear things like discussion of Whole Foods' nickname as Whole Paycheck. We hear about really, really inexpensive but unhealthy fast food meal deals where you can get four fast food menu items for $4. So we see not only stories in the media, but all around us, we see lots of examples of very expensive healthy food and very inexpensive unhealthy food. And the reality is there are also in grocery stores that we can see examples of healthy food that is affordable. But as a culture, we just don't talk about that as much. The media doesn't pay as much attention to it. You see tons of websites devoted to how to eat healthy on a budget, suggesting that it's actually really hard to do. And so we're bombarded with all these messages, and we come to believe that healthy foods are more expensive, period. And we don't stop to think, well, is that actually true in this product category? Is that actually true in every case? And it becomes something that we overapply, even in cases where it's not necessarily true.
Mm. So a lot of people think, and if you go to a store that sells organic meats, organic vegetables, that they will find that the prices tend to be higher than they are in your regular IGA or whatever your local grocery store is. Is that not true?
That is true.
I would say organic. In those cases, organic has true meaning to it. That is, there's an actual process to be certified to call your product organic. So there is meaning behind that, and often the production process itself is more costly in those cases. And so those are often the examples that do, in fact, have a healthy equals more expensive relationship. However, that's really not the entire market of what people are encountering. And as Rebecca suggested, it's this over-application of this link that people perceive between healthy and expensiveness that can lead people astray.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, in the article that you write, and tell me more about this, valuing the importance of an unfamiliar specific ingredient in a food product. This is interesting. The importance of DHA. What is DHA? What did you discover in that area?
So DHA is an ingredient that actually does have some benefits for eye health, but it's an ingredient that a lot of consumers are not familiar with. And we ran a study where we compared a trail mix that was a perfect vision trail mix that we said either had DHA added for eye health or had vitamin A, which also does have benefits for eye health, had vitamin A added for this perfect vision mix. And we wanted to see if we had these products priced at a premium, would people assume that DHA was overall a more important part of a healthy diet if they just saw it priced at a premium relative to an average trail mix? And we tested DHA compared to vitamin A for a reason, and that is people are more likely to rely on their lay theories when they encounter something that's unfamiliar. And we had pre-tested DHA versus vitamin A and found that a lot more consumers are familiar with the idea that vitamin A can help eye health. They weren't nearly as familiar with DHA. And when we ran a study, what we found is that when the DHA was paired with a price premium, so it was more expensive, people actually said that they thought DHA was a more important part of a healthy diet, and they were more interested in taking DHA supplements and more concerned about eye health in general, just because they'd seen DHA paired with a higher price point. And we did not see that effect for vitamin A. When it was something people were familiar with, they didn't rely on this healthy equals expensive intuition nearly as much. So what that suggests to me is that as consumers, we go into the store, we see the latest fad ingredient being promoted as healthy. It may be something we're not familiar with, that we haven't seen in stores before, that we haven't seen as part of packaged goods. And if we see it for the first time paired with a high price, we are going to be more likely to think that it is an important health ingredient just because of that price.
Yeah, interesting. At one point in the article, you say that you found consumers need to believe that healthy foods are, in fact, more expensive. You say this may hold true in only some product categories. Do we know what those product categories are?
Well, the organic foods that you mentioned before is certainly one of those examples where we do tend to see real price differences. And Rebecca mentioned the Whole Foods type of store before, and there are oftentimes more specialty type of grocery retailers that people will associate higher prices overall with the retailer. So that may be another example where you might feel like there's some truth to it, but even within that setting, it would be based on the nature of the food itself. And again, that's where people tend to overgeneralize again based on a retail level assessment rather than food product category.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about things like, natural is one of those claims that has come under attack in recent years because it's essentially meaningless. There's no actual governing control over what that claim means. And so, therefore, that is one of those key categories where using the claim of natural suggests meaning. And, in fact, many consumers see it as synonymous with organic, but it's not. And so I think those are kind of two nice contrasting examples of when healthy equals expensive might actually be true and when it's not, but consumers likely assume it is.
So what you're suggesting here is that we really need to look very carefully, and I'm wondering what it is we need to look at in terms of how we determine whether a product is a product that's good for us, that's healthy, and you've got two things in front of you and one is 50 cents more than the other. What is it you look at? The list of ingredients? Do you need to be better informed about, vitamin A and other things and what's good for your eyes? It seems like it could be rather complicated to find out what indeed is a good deal, huh? And helpful.
The question, what does healthy mean, is just an enormously misunderstood question in and of itself. Take away the price component of it. That's the angle we're looking at here. But in general, understanding what we mean by healthy is such a complex issue. And some other research I've done taps into this a little bit at a cross-cultural level. we have this essential idea, it's been called the French paradox, where people in France are more likely to eat what we would think of as richer, fattier foods, but they tend to eat them more in moderate quantities. So to them, healthy is very much related to how natural and unprocessed a food is, whereas in the United States, evidence suggests that people tend to look more at lower calories or low fat or low sugar or low sodium. They tend to think more about those things when they think about what healthy is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the current research, we don't get into that. We let consumers believe whatever they want to believe in terms of healthiness, and we give them some prompts to sort of give them general guidelines to think about healthiness in categories. For example, we provide healthiness grades like many online websites would do to give you this sort of holistic picture of the healthiness level of a food item. For example, you see calorie count is one I like to look at. You'll see grades from A to F in terms of sort of a global assessment of the healthiness level of a food. But all of those are still subjective assessments, and consumers have their own views of what exactly healthiness means to them. And so that's what makes it so interesting, that changing the price can have an impact on those perceptions.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we have a long way to go to become intelligent consumers about what's healthy for us.
Well, I would add that one thing that consumers can do that would help, people are more likely to rely on their lay theories when it's something that's unfamiliar. So I would say the best thing you can do as a consumer is when you encounter an unfamiliar ingredient, a health claim you haven't seen before, that's when it's worth it to pause and take the time to actually engage in a little more information search. So to be aware of your tendency to assume that just because it's expensive, that it must be healthy for you. That's when you need to take a step, pause. A lot of us have mobile devices with us when we're shopping. It may be worth it to stop and take that extra time. And the other thing that you can do as a consumer is a lot of front of package claims. They are less regulated in some senses than what's on the back of packages. So if you're looking at packaged foods, a company has a little more leeway on what they put on the front of a package. Like Kelly was mentioning, they could put natural on the front. It's not necessarily regulated. But everything on the back of a package, on the nutrition facts panel,
mm-hmm.
that's specifically just content. That's just what's in the product, how much of it, how much of the daily value you're getting of that required nutrient. So I would encourage consumers, if they are, you know, confused on which of these two products is better for me, turn the product around, ignore the front of package claims, and look specifically at the nutrition facts panel on the back of the package. That's where you're going to find the objective information.
Yeah, and then you need to know what all that information means, right? You have to look it up.
You do also, yes, absolutely. And right now, sort of the three main categories that are under fire are fat, and then sugars, and then salt. Those are the three that tend to get the most attention and tend to have the most sort of general agreement that we should watch our intake in these particular areas. But you start talking about specific vitamins and minerals, and consumers are not very aware of exactly what those things mean and what they need in their daily diet. So again, many, many sources out there try to give guidance about exactly how to, you know, put together a diet that provides you the right balance of the nutrients that you need. But I do think there's a lot of confusion amongst consumers. And as Rebecca said, the theories, the lay theories that are used in food decision making, they are even stronger when we encounter something unfamiliar to us. And the marketplace is full of new types of products and new types of claims all the time. And so taking that time to take a step back and do a little more research when something is unfamiliar can be extremely helpful.
Right. We're going to start taking phone calls in a moment. Before we do that, though, Richard on Facebook wonders if this is food elitism, another product of our affluence. That's a good question, is it?
You know, it may be that people have a general theory that high price equals high quality.
Yes.
And we know that that's not always true, right? In other product categories, that's not always the case, but sometimes people will seek out a high price product as a high status product. And it may be that people are shopping at grocery stores like Whole Foods, not just because they think it's more healthy, but because they see it as a status symbol, where in reality, you can get healthy produce that's not necessarily organic, but is still quite good for you at a much lower price at a variety of other types of retailers. So I do think that sometimes seeking out a specific grocery store environment may actually be part of trying to signal status.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's welcome phone calls. We all have to eat. We all shop for food. And so let's find out about you and your shopping and how you shop for price. There are items I'm sure that when you are shopping, you find to be consistently expensive wherever you happen to shop. We can talk about those items. Maybe there's an area where you live where there isn't much of a choice for grocery shopping. Our guests mention in their article food deserts. Do those affect the community's ability to eat healthy, to be able to afford food? Have you bypassed healthier foods ever for something less healthy, maybe for fast food, merely because it fills you up and you get a lot of food and it doesn't cost you very much money? Do you trust the food labels on packaging when they declare themselves to be healthy or all natural? Maybe from what our guests have said, you shouldn't. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Kelly Hawes, Associate Professor of Marketing and Chancellor's Faculty Fellow in the Owen Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt, is with us. Rebecca Walker-Rezik is an associate professor of marketing at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. And we have lines open for you, so we'd like to hear from you. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's welcome phone calls on our topic of the hour, 800-486-8655. And we go to Wendy in Oconomowoc first. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that we also have a government that subsidizes corn, soybeans, and when those kind of things like the corn and soybeans are added to the processed food and that's subsidized, that makes processed food cheaper as opposed to whole foods like fresh fruits and vegetables, which don't get subsidized. And also the cost of certifying organic has to be passed along to the consumer as well, and those foods are better and often have fewer pesticides, but they have to pass that cost along. So that does make fresh fruits and vegetables that are good for you more expensive.
Mm, good point. Rebecca, Kelly?
Yeah, and this is the fact that there is more than a grain of truth in the idea that healthy foods are more expensive. People wouldn't subscribe to this lay theory if there wasn't some basis for believing in it in the first place. In our studies, we actually found that people apply the lay theory even in the processed foods category, that even a processed food, like we look at things like protein bars and trail mixes and breakfast bars, even in categories like that, people thought that if it was a healthier product, it must be more expensive. So definitely it is true that organic fruits, vegetables, meats are more expensive, and I really think that's one of the basis of belief for why people think this is true across other product categories.
And let's go next to Marilyn. Is it in Madison? Hi.
Hi. I wondered if your guest had any expertise in the area of package labeling as far as Whole Foods goes. I've been buying canned salmon, and it says wild caught, but the price on the small can is so low, really, extremely reasonable, that I'm thinking it must be farm-raised.
How do you find out about that kind of information? Kelly, Rebecca, whoever.
I do a fair amount of research into food labels and claims, but not necessarily specific to particular industries or product types in a more general sense. So I really think you'd have to go directly to the manufacturer of that product to sort of bear out that claim. But, you know, as much as, you know, we try to protect consumers through laws that require that the claims being made are true, not every claim is covered, and certainly not every product is going to be fully scanned and fully checked out to make sure that it in fact meets the claim. We try to enforce those, but I think the best way on an individual circumstance like that is to go back to the manufacturer and try to figure out exactly what the basis for that claim is. But I would like to say that this is a great example of use of the healthy equals expensive intuition, because when we find examples that seem to run counter to that intuition, we have this need to get a greater proof, greater evidence that in fact it is true. And that's exactly one of the issues we look at in our research, is that when we find counterexamples, we question it more. We need a little bit more evidence to believe that it's true. So I guess my optimistic outlook here is that it is, in fact, wild caught.
Okay.
And it's managed to deliver it at a reasonable price.
Well, it tastes very good, so I'm not going to stop buying.
That's good.
Even if it's farm-raised. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Marlene Sue in Cable, Wisconsin. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have for years bought organic food, paid more for it because I could afford it, and I've done it to support the movement as such. Is that naive now, or is that still helpful?
I think there is a difference in the amount of pesticides. As a previous caller mentioned, that there are, in general, fewer pesticides in organic produce. There are produce where it matters more than other types of produce, and you can actually look online and you can find lists of produce where health experts recommend that it makes more of a difference to buy organic versus not. And for Kelly and I, as consumer psychologists, it's a little bit outside of our area of expertise, but I would say if you are interested in, you know, which fruits and vegetables does it make the biggest difference, there is a lot of information out there that for some vegetables it does not matter as much, and for others it matters much more.
Mm. And where do you get that info? Can I just find out where you get that info?
You can actually look and just simply Google which produce is it more important to buy organic, and there's a list of the Dirty Dozen I've seen that shows you which produce that are more likely to retain pesticides, so it's more important to buy organic on.
Oh, okay.
Right, and I would recommend that you look at, you know, two or three different reputable sources and kind of compare and contrast and come up with your own assessments a little bit on that, because there are some different opinions, but to kind of return to an earlier topic just a bit, and when we talk about it, the organic produce, again, some produce is more important than others, it's been found, but when you shift over to the more processed food categories, many of which still bear the organic claims, those may be areas where you might want to closely evaluate whether or not there's true value to what you're paying for there.
No. Sue, you had something else?
Well, it was just a matter of, does the movement continue to need our support just to buy organic because it's labeled organic, or are the organic people doing better now?
There has been a general upsurge in consumer interest in organic products, but I would say as a consumer, one of the most important things you can do is to vote with your wallet, and if that's something that you value for personal reasons, then I think absolutely go ahead, keep supporting the movement, because in general, companies respond to the market. And when there's consumer demand, you see more being produced. So the more consumer demand there is for organic products, the more successful companies that are producing organic products are going to be.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sue, for your call. Mm-hmm. Rita in Madison. Hi.
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 I just want to make a comment about education. I studied nutrition myself. And it's not that easy to even read the back of the labels. And corporations don't make it easy to read the back of the labels on purpose. And, you know, really high school is a place to start, in my opinion, for people to be healthy and know what to eat. But also today, the books that are out there, which are also, I'm sure, all over the Internet, but books, trusted people. You have to find trusted people who are telling you honestly, and it's not necessarily the government. There's just this lack of basic information about food and nutrients and how to be healthy, and it should start in high school. I don't know what.
Ma'am, I would go even further, as I have elementary school children. even earlier, I think you're absolutely right. Teaching our children from as early age as possible what it means. I think one of the biggest barriers here, and I'm drawing a little bit more from interactions with researchers that are actually in the medical field that I've had, but there's just still a lot of confusion about what it truly means for something to be healthy or nutritious. And new scientific studies come up with new evidence that something we previously thought was just a terrible thing to eat is really not so bad. And one of the key things that I try to look at in a lot of through my consumer psychologist lens is that think about portion sizes and think about moderation and think about the entire scope of what you're putting in your diet rather than so much focus on one item at one point in time. And I think if you can teach that healthy balance to children starting at a younger age, that we can really start to change the way Americans eat.
Thank you, Rita, very much for your call. Tom in South Beloit, hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. I wanted to ask your guest to, at least comment on this, but I think the idea that people either don't or don't know how to cook contributes to this whole thing. If you're spending money on processed food, you're spending a lot more for the same nutrition than if you were to get the basic ingredients and prepare it yourself.
I think you are absolutely right. Now, we did not address this directly in our research, but one of the maybe hidden costs of buying healthy food is that healthy food that's affordable is often the whole food, right? It's not processed food. It's produce or it's dried beans. It's things that require labor to make it into nutritious, tasty food, whereas processed food requires sometimes just sticking it in the microwave and pushing a few buttons. And we did not look at that in this research, but I believe this is one of the barriers to consumers buying healthy and affordable food. Is it requires costs in terms of labor and time. And Tom, you mentioned maybe people also just don't know how to cook. So there may be an education barrier there, not just in knowing what is healthy, but an education barrier in knowing, okay, I've managed to buy a lot of affordable, healthy foods in terms of legumes and produce. And now what do I do with it?
Well,
I think that's an excellent point.
Why don't we know how to cook?
There we're getting into societal issues with people having such busy schedules. I think that people have less time
right.
for cooking, and yes. So there's maybe just less interest in focusing on cooking and more interest in focusing on convenience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder if we still have, unfortunately, these were always segregated classes, and I always wanted to be in the shop classes instead of the home ec classes, I'm afraid. But what happened to all those classes, which probably should be for everybody? There's no harm in having a freshman, sophomore, junior in high school class, for a semester on how to cook, how to fix your car.
Well, I can tell you I think college students, and I know a lot of my current college-age students, a lot of them are not spending a lot of time cooking.
Right.
No doubt about that. And I think, over the years, more children are being raised in homes where there's been a heavy leaning on to more convenience-oriented foods. And so that would be the first place to get the education before you get to the high school home ec types of courses. And less of that is happening. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen trends over the last 25 years or so towards a heavier portion of our food that we consume coming from restaurants and other out-of-home sources. So yeah. this decline has been going on for a while. And if we kind of think back to the food elitist comment from earlier, it's almost become sort of an art, right, to cook and prepare food.
Yes.
And it's an art that may seem more accessible to those of greater means. And that probably feeds into this overall cycle as well.
Right. Thank you, Tom. Interesting point. Stephen in Jacksonport. Hello, Stephen.
Hello. I am a market farmer up here in Door County, Wisconsin, and growing vegetables is a very labor-intensive it's very labor-intensive, and the whole thing with organics is back in the 70s to inform people and know what's in your food, chemicals, pesticides, and, you know, the food is much better tasting, and you decide whether you want chemicals in your food. Most of the small producers of all the natural stuff have sold out to the bigger companies, and there was a good point that your guess made is which vegetables retain more
yes.
pesticides. And so anyhow, bottom line is you decide which, you know, what you want to consume. If you want chemicals and pesticides in your food.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that's all I had to say.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Whoever wants to respond, go right ahead.
Well, I'll add to his comment that consumers do ultimately get to choose what they're purchasing, and there is a growing consumer interest in buying healthy, whatever that means. And, of course, the problem is the ambiguity about what does healthy mean. But there's also a growing consumer trend and interest in buying local. And I think that applies certainly to fruits and vegetables. This is especially true among millennial consumers. They are becoming more and more interested in where their food comes from. And even sometimes in large grocery chains, you'll see local produce featured in large grocery chains. And that is in part due to consumer demand that especially among millennial shoppers are more and more interested in authenticity and local foods.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Stephen, for your call. Let's go to Steve in Madison. Hi.
Hi. First, I'd like to say I'm very impressed with your two guests. But then I want to ask them a question, and they are in marketing, my understanding. And part of the problem that we have, like when you have something on the front of a package that says natural, is that you have people who do market research, and they understand that you can manipulate people by putting that on the front of a package. But what I'm wondering is they seem to be very straightforward, honest people who try to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
Yet their profession seems to perhaps graduate people who are trying to manipulate people. So I'm curious, are there courses in ethics in marketing programs? And how do they feel about marketing as a manipulating field?
All right. Thanks, Steve. Rebecca, you want to start?
Sure. That's actually a great question, and that is almost the exact question that I raised to my MBA students in my consumer behavior class, which is we've just spent a semester learning about consumer psychology. How are you going to use this information? Is it, if you're trying to persuade people to buy a product, are you manipulating them, or are you trying to present offerings to them that will satisfy their needs? And so we do absolutely talk about the ethics, about that really the goal of marketing should be to foster trust in the profession. That doesn't mean there aren't unscrupulous people in marketing. But in both my undergraduate and my MBA classes, we do talk about ethics, and we talk about the ultimate goal being to foster trust in the marketplace, which means not making deceptive claims, and ultimately means trying to give consumers things that satisfy their needs, not trying to create needs that don't exist, but figuring out what are consumers' needs, whether their psychological needs are physiological needs, and bringing offerings to market that satisfy those needs. But absolutely, every class I teach, we bring up ethics throughout the semester. And in my undergraduate class, the last lecture of the semester is actually exclusively devoted to ethics and social responsibility.
Let's go to Cindy in Fox Cities next. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. Well, talking about ethics, I guess I would say that the pharmaceuticals would be involved in this ethically, because I think they are going to be lobbying hard to do what you had proposed earlier about teaching kids in school and high school, because their motivation is to keep us sick. So we take lots of drugs to make ourselves feel better, which really don't make us feel better. They only make things worse. But I think that's where the real ethical issue lies, is with these companies like the pharmaceuticals and Monsanto, who just merged with Bayer. That gives me great pause, because here's a GMO company and a pharmaceutical company merging, so it doesn't give me much hope.
Thank you, Cindy. And we did a very interesting and disturbing show on antibiotic use a couple of weeks ago among farm animals, pigs and chickens, and it was very disturbing. Do you look at those issues as well when you determine the healthfulness of foods? Kelly and Rebecca?
Certainly, you know, food scientists look at those kinds of issues, and the manufacturers are aware of what they're doing out there. That, again, that one goes a little bit beyond our direct area of expertise in terms of the actual chemicals used in the process and those sorts of things. But, again, one of the things that we try to do to sort of protect consumers is we try to sort of support the idea of providing information, right? We don't want to be hiding things from consumers. We want them to be able to easily access information about the kinds of products they buy and the types of food that they eat. And as an example, one of the provisions in the Patient Protection Act of 2010 that has been slowly rolling out, but it's supposed to finally come fully on board this year, is with restaurant menu labeling, for example. And here, the idea is, in fact, to provide more information to consumers. So part of our role as marketers, and Rebecca and I personally don't sell anything, so you know, we're not making any money on any claims. We're just evaluating how consumers respond to them. But it's just to make that information available. At that point, it really is up to the consumer to decide how they want to use it, whether they want to use it at all or not.
Mm-hmm.
And just a cold, hard fact of life is that we're just busy and we're bombarded by information and messages. And the way we deal with that as consumers is to come up with these shortcuts so that we can make more efficient decisions so we can move on with life. So individual consumers have different levels of how much they're concerned about these particular issues. And one of the callers earlier who's that she's been buying organic, she's clearly a consumer that's just going to feel better about what she's consuming and doing if she continues to buy those products. And in my opinion, that alone is enough to tell her, yes, you're doing the right thing, because that's making you feel better about your choices.
Yeah, more phone calls in a moment. We need to pause for just a moment. What's the actual relationship between health and food costs? We're speaking this hour with Associate Professor of Marketing and Chancellor's Faculty Fellow in the Owen Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt. Kelly Hawes is with us, and also an Associate Professor of Marketing at the Fisher College of Business at Ohio State University. Dr. Rebecca Walker-Resnick is with us. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we'll take more of your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Elaine in Colfax, hi.
Hi. My husband and I grow most of our vegetables organically at home, and it's interesting because if we have an off year with broccoli, then we just don't eat a lot of broccoli that year. And if we have a great year for squash, we figure out how to use squash more, or we donate some to a food bank. But because we do this, it also allows us to purchase organic noodles and rice and fruit, and it's still really expensive even though we grow most of our vegetables and, you know, eat from scratch. But we don't buy a lot of packaged organic products. We still buy, you know, rice in a, you know, just a package where we make the rice. We don't have it already cooked for us. So that saves money. And I had one other comment that if people can't take the time to grow, or they just don't have the space to grow their own food, go to a farmer's market and freeze a lot of things in season. You'll get just excellent quality, and the flavor will be fantastic. So that's just some ideas I had. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Kelly, Rebecca?
I think that's excellent.
The idea of getting peak season crops and freezing them, saving them for later, that's one of the best ways that you can overcome the expensiveness that can go with healthy. So I think that's a fantastic idea. If more people grew their own organic vegetables at home, we'd have a lot healthier people.
Mm-hmm. John on Facebook says, it's a myth that organic produce is pesticide-free. In fact, organic farming, he's talking large scale, not your average backyard self-proclaimed organic gardener, often requires more applications of pesticides, herbicide, than transgenic crops. And let me go to another email from John, maybe a different one. From everything I've read, it would be impossible to feed 6 billion people on this earth if we use just organic techniques. Could you answer that?
I think he's right that given the population of the earth, that it is probably not realistic for everyone to have access to organic produce. But I think it's important to remember that when we're talking about what's healthy, neither Kelly nor I are saying that only organic foods are healthy. Organic foods are an example of healthy foods that are more expensive, but there are many, many examples of other foods that are not organic. So even your conventionally grown produce or locally grown produce that may not be grown organically can still be quite healthy. I actually don't buy organic fruits and vegetables in all categories in my house, and my husband's actually an organic chemist, and we still don't buy all organic fruits and vegetables.
Hmm. Let's go to David in Fort Atkinson next. Hi, David.
Hi, Kathleen. I was wondering if either one of your guests in the studies had run across the people who sort of buy into the organic and or gluten-free labeling as somehow being a superior product in as far as nutritional value. I know a lot of people believe that an organically grown vegetable or fruit actually has more of a nutrient load than and one that's grown using pesticides. And I was wondering if they, the same thing actually in the gluten-free market, believing that consuming gluten-free, even though you have no gluten-free allergies, is somehow going to benefit you anyway. And if they had run across in their studies a lot of people who buy into that those concepts.
I think a lot of people are buying into gluten-free, aren't they, even though they don't need to?
This is true, and that's certainly been one of the biggest ones in the recent years in the marketplace. But in general, we didn't study those specific topics of organic or gluten-free. Rather, those are exemplars of the types of categories where it is potentially more likely that healthier and more expensive go hand in hand. But to his point in terms of gluten-free, there is an outcry against this idea of, well, if you don't have a problem with gluten, it's not that big of a deal. So the problem here, again, is that, the science is the science emerges and is added to and adapted over time, and then the dominant information in the media is sort of what consumers tend to start buying into. And right now I would still argue that organic and gluten-free are both held in high regard in the marketplace by many consumers. And my sense is that, like other things that have kind of risen to the top of what people are most concerned about in the past, and then they kind of fade out over time, the likelihood is that these will become less of the highly favored attributes of food in time as well. But that's just kind of my personal opinion. But we've seen many trends with different claims over time. And I could throw out a couple. High fructose corn syrup was on everything for a while.
Yes.
Fat was everywhere for a while, to the point where they stopped making anything. They stopped using trans fat because you can no longer justify doing so. So that one did actually kind of change the way we think. But we go through these cycles where, certain things are sort of the leading good things or the leading bad things in our food. And these don't stand up necessarily over longer periods of time as science and technology change.
Hmm. Is there anything that either of you eat every day just because you know it's good for you to have every day?
I think for me, I'm really conscientious about taking a multivitamin, actually. I think more in terms of health, supplements, actually, rather more than food.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. I earlier sort of alluded to the idea of I'm a big proponent of sort of moderation. So I like to think that we can still be healthy people while allowing some stuff into our diet that clearly nobody is going to argue is healthy. And I jokingly say Reese's peanut butter cups because those are my favorite. But I surround that by a lot of broccoli and a lot of spinach and a lot of lean proteins and a lot of other, you know, sort of whole foods, whole produce, you know, straight that I do prepare for the most part. I don't cook a lot. I fall into that category a bit, but you know, I cook enough.
The other caller's point about cooking, starting with whole foods and trying to cook from there rather than using processed foods, I do actively try to incorporate that into my life.
No, that's good. You did remind me, though, this is terrible after a whole show on healthy eating, that I have a little tiny Reese's peanut butter tree on my desk.
That's okay.
Which I'm probably going to go eat when this show is over. Yeah, they're good. They're really good. David, thanks very much for the call. Frank and Stanley, hi.
Yes, I'd like to say that if people are interested in losing weight and feeling better all at the whole same time, there are some things that you could do. Number one, you don't eat wheat, corn, or soy because those things are all GMO, and your body doesn't know how to deal with GMO, so it turns into fat. And the third thing that you do is no processed foods. And the fourth and the last thing is sugar. Don't eat sugar. And as far as cooking oils, you use olive oil, coconut oil, or peanut oil. All those other oils, you stay away from those because they use a lot of heat and chemicals in processing those oils.
Yeah. Are you following somebody's diet, Frank, or you just found this through your life, or what's the deal?
Well, I've lost close to 70 pounds in 2 years without even trying.
Good for you.
It's fairly paleo in nature.
Yeah,
which is certainly a very you know, prolific sort of phenomenon right now. Lots of people trying to follow a diet more like that. It really cuts all the processed ingredients from your diet.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's some things wrong with eating wheat, corn, and soy? I don't mean to our caller. I mean to our guest, Rebecca.
Yeah, you know, as someone who is not a dietitian, as a consumer psychologist, I hesitate to give diet advice, although I do agree with the caller that avoiding processed foods is going to be a great way to avoid, for example, sodium, that we know that Americans eat too much sodium, just so much sodium in processed foods to help retain flavor.
Right.
So I do think there are some things that it makes sense to avoid. I'm not comfortable necessarily saying that wheat and soy are two of those.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, people eat a lot of sugar. It's not good to eat a lot of sugar.
Yes, I do. I think that we can
say
fairly unequivocally that sugar and salt are things that, as Americans, we have too much of in our diet.
Exactly. Ladies, thank you very much, professors, for being with us. It was an interesting hour. Thanks.
Thank you for having
You're
me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Professor Kelly Hawes, Associate Professor of Marketing and Chancellor's Faculty Fellow in the Olin Graduate School of Management at Vanderbilt, and Rebecca Walker-Resnick, Associate Professor of Marketing at the Fisher College of Business at The Ohio State University. Tomorrow during this hour, we'll speak with a young woman who's a Somali refugee, has written a book about her life. She's in high school, I believe, and she'll be talking about her resettlement to the United States and ultimately to Milwaukee. Just a reminder that this afternoon, in just a very short period of time, Governor Scott Walker will give his State of the State address. There will also be a minority response. And tonight, it's President Barack Obama's farewell address, tonight at 8 o'clock. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, and thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, for all of your calls and for your interest. We thank you. We'll be with you again tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock.